Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, October 26, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. We've got a great show today. We'll be hearing from Tim Kirchen on whether one World Series participant has a chance to be the pitcher's version of Derek Jeter and whether an attempted steal of home was the right move in Game 5 of the World Series last night. Sarah Langs will stop by and play the numbers game. And we'll hear from Dan Shulman about where he ranks the end of crazy Game 4 among his World Series calls. Last night, the Rays and Dodgers played Game 5. This, of course, after that shocking end to Game 4. And the Dodgers needed to turn the page. They did quickly.
A look back at Betts at second. And the 0-1 on the way. And a curveball pulled into right field. That's a base hit. Betts around third. He is coming home. The throw will be cut. And it's an RBI single for Seager and an early 1-0 lead for the Dodgers.
Dan Shulman with the call on ESPN Radio. Yeah, in this game, the Rays really needed Tyler Glasnow to be efficient, but it seemed again that he struggled with his adrenaline in a World Series game. He would throw 34 pitches in the first inning, including this.
And it's a wild pitch to advance him. And now Bellinger with a ground ball into shallow right. Lau won't have a play anywhere. Had to race to his right, got to it, but didn't have a play from out in shallow right. Seager scores. Muncy to second. RBI single Bellinger, and it is 2-0 Dodgers.
Glasnow could not throw a breaking ball for a strike, effectively making him a one-pitch pitcher. I got a text from a current major league catcher who said, that's the type of guy that the Dodgers can feast on. That's what Jock Peterson did in the top of the second.
1-2, and a fastball that Peterson gets a hold of. He's hit it to deep left center field, and it's gone. Jock Peterson hits one out, and the Dodgers lead 3-0 already.
3-0 with Clayton Kershaw on the mound, but in the bottom of the third inning, the Rays started to come back.
There's the 1-1, and Diaz hits it sharply to right field, and that ball's going to get down. Betts over, and it skips by him into the corner. It was hit so hard, he couldn't get to it. Rounding third, Kiermaier with great speed, coming in to score, and into third safely, and a head-first dive is Yandy Diaz with a triple, and the Rays are on the board trailing 3-1.
And the rally would continue with a milestone.
The set by Kershaw, and the 1-2 in a curveball that he swings and lines into left field, a base hit. Rosarena got a high curveball. Not nearly the quality of pitch as the curveball earlier in the at-bat. And he drives it into left field for an RBI single to bring in Diaz and make it 3-2. And he is asking for the baseball over at first. And I believe that's because that's his 27th hit in the playoffs, breaking a record that he shared with Pablo Sandoval. Isn't that right? I think the Panda had 26 hits. Wow. So Randy Arozarena's got a new record, and he's well aware of it.
Yeah, that was a cool moment for him. 28 hits in the postseason at that point. Now, in the bottom of the fourth, with the Rays trailing 3-2, Manny Margot led off with a walk. He would steal second base. He would go to third. There would be another walk. But then there was a pop-up and a strikeout. And with two outs in first and third, Margot leading off third base, this is what happened.
Shift on with three on the right side. And they're going to try to steal home, but he's thrown out. Margot says, have a look. The shift was on, and Margot was able to get a huge break down the line, and he just tried a straight steal of home. Got a running start. Kershaw was alerted to it, stepped off. The throw was to the wrong side of the plate. Boy, what a bold move right there. And yes, Barnes did get the tag on the forearm before the hand got to the plate. The Rays just tried a straight steal of home in a World Series game.
Right after that, the Dodgers added to their lead.
3-2, and Muncy gets a hold of one and drills a ball to deep right center field and gone. Muncy crushes it. And it is 4-2 Dodgers.
In the bottom of the fifth inning, Clayton Kershaw reached a milestone.
The 1-2, swing and a miss, got him on a fastball up and in, and that is a new record. He tied it last inning and he breaks it right now. 206 strikeouts in the postseason for Clayton Kershaw, surpassing Justin Verlander, and Kershaw just threw the ball out of play.
So Kershaw would leave the game with the Dodgers leading 4-2 with two outs in the bottom of the sixth inning. And Dave Roberts, whose bullpen was in tatters after that crazy game four, needed other heroes to step up, and he got that. Dustin May, Victor Gonzalez came into the game in the eighth inning. There were two runners on base, and this is what happened.
The 0-1 on the way, and a fastball. He jammed him. A little looper, shallow center. Bellinger coming on, and he makes the running catch for the third out. Victor Gonzalez gets it done. And at the end of eight, it is still the Dodgers 4 and the Rays 2.
In the bottom of the ninth inning, with Kenley Jansen unavailable because he'd thrown 36 pitches in games 3 and 4, Dave Roberts turned to Blake Treinen for his first save attempt in almost 2 months.
Treinen the set. And the 1-2, swing and a miss. He got him. Blake Treinen gets it done. Gets the save. And the Dodgers win 4-2 to take a 3-2 lead in the World Series.
After the game, Clayton Kershaw, who's been the winning pitcher in 2 games in this World Series, was asked about that strikeout record.
It means that I've been on great teams that have gotten to go to the postseason a lot, and I've got to get a lot of starts in the postseason. So obviously a very special opportunity. It's just a special thing to get to be a part of a team like this and get to be a part of some of those names.
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw, as he spoke to the reporters, his kids were tumbling around in a fun scene. He talked about being successful in the postseason.
You know, anytime you can have success in the postseason, it just means so much. That's what you work for. That's what you play for this month. And, you know, I know what the other end of that feels like, too. So I'll definitely take it when I can get it.
Here's Tyler Glasnow, who struggled for command early.
Just out of rhythm to start. Obviously didn't go as planned, but I think after that second inning or so, I think I got timing was a little better. I think it lined up a little bit more, but I just think it wasn't soon enough, obviously. So just a little out of rhythm the first 2 innings.
Here's Dave Roberts on what he said to Kershaw when he took him from the game in the sixth inning.
So I just told him I love the way he competes, and that's it. And just finish the game cheering on your teammates. It was a gutty performance because, again, I don't think he was his best stuff, and he still found a way to go 5+ and give us a chance to win a baseball game.
Roberts talked about his pitching.
Going into this one 2-2 to get a win was huge, any way we could get it. And started with Clayton and Austin tonight. They both did a great job. Getting a lead early, the Corey base hit to start us off was huge. Tack on some runs and, you know, the guys in the bullpen. It was just fun to watch tonight. Watching Dustin, Victor, and Blake, it just really came up big tonight.
He talked about Kershaw's reaction on that attempted steal of home.
We were all surprised. We don't see that, you know, very often at all. I haven't seen it all with a savvy player like Clayton. Obviously, left-handed pitcher with his back to the runner. But Kiermaier, left on left, I could see it. But Clayton just really heads up and made a good play and Austin with a great tag.
Rays manager Kevin Cash talked about the Rays' current situation down 3-2.
Well, we're going to have to do it again. We got to somehow prevent them from getting early leads on us. That's both ways. Offensively, we got to do our part a little earlier, set a tone. You know, on the pitching front with Glas, they got to him quick, drove his pitch count up. Look, I was impressed that he was able to get through 5 innings. I don't think any of us thought that was going to be a possibility in the second or third inning. He held him close enough to within striking distance. But we're just going to have to, you know, take the off day and bounce back.
Just to follow up on Glasnow, Cash was asked about how the Dodgers got to him so quickly.
What hurt him is the talent of the Dodgers lineup, I think, more than anything. They're just really, really talented and can make pitchers work and drive the pitch count up. They drive the pitch count up, and then it seems like they find a way to get the big hit. A couple wild pitches in there to allow runners to advance to where the second run, I don't think, scores if we're able to prevent him from getting to the third base there on the wild pitch. But like I said, I give credit to Glas for kind of calming himself a little bit in the moment and finding a way to get through 5.
It was pretty clear as Cash talked that attempted steal of home plate was not something that was called from the dugout. Here's Kevin Cash on Manny Margot.
I know Kershaw has the real high handset, whatever he does, and I think Manny just felt like he had a bead on it that he could time him up. You know, frustrating inning. Man on third, no outs. Then first and third, no outs. Pop up, strike out, and then get thrown out trying to do that. Ideally, we got to find a way to get that guy in to tie the game right there.
Before we get to Tim, Dan, and Sarah, check out the latest episode of Fantasy Focus Football. Field, Matthew, Stefania, Daniel recap week 7 of the NFL and look ahead to week 8. Download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football wherever you get your podcast, and watch it live weekdays at 10 a.m., streaming on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and the ESPN app.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
1-2. Again, they're down to their final strike. And the pitch, a swing and a ball lined into right center, a base hit. Kiermaier around third. It's booted by Taylor. A Rosarena coming home. And now he's caught. And now Smith drops the ball. And a Rosarena scores. At the plate, they had a Rosarena caught. And he lost the ball. A Rosarena slides in. And somehow, miraculously, the Rays have won the game. I have never seen anything like that in my life.
And that, of course, the unmistakable voice of Dan Schulman, who's doing play-by-play on ESPN Radio alongside Jessica Mendoza and Chris Singleton. And Dan, we'll talk about what happened in Game 5 last night and where the World Series stands. But I wanted to bring you in on that because, you know, I thought of you right away. You and I have always joked about how you wanted me to do play-by-play, and I always tell you, no, that's like my worst nightmare. A moment like that is a great example of that because I could sit there and process and watch that play and just have a reaction. You had to describe what you're thinking. You were at the microphone. How did you sort through that chaos?
It's exactly what it was, Buster. It was chaos, and it's great to be with you. And you know, what makes it more chaotic, of course, is not being on site at the ballpark, which we all understand, but it's a lot more challenging doing it from the studio. And, you know, I think if you break, if there are 100 things that you're supposed to do right in broadcasting, and then somebody says, okay, but you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that. If you break it right down to number one is just say what you see. And I've talked to my son about that. He's starting to get into the business. And I said, like, when all hell breaks loose, if there's nothing else going right, just say what you see. And to be honest with you, I don't love that call. I've heard it a bunch, obviously, because it's a crazy play and it's been everywhere on the ESPN platforms the last couple of days. But like, as you know, we didn't see a Rosarena fall down. We didn't know that it happened until later on. And I wasn't sure, did Smith have the ball and then he lost it when he tried to do the sweep tag, or did he never have it? But at the end of the day, I guess, it kind of sort of told the story. And at least I said the Rosarena slides in safely and the Rays won. But it was, it was really, really, really exciting. But it was a stressful 20 seconds of my life, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, yesterday when we talked to Kevin Cash, the Rays manager, I asked him about it, like how many times did he need to see the replay before he understood exactly what happened on the play. And he got the feeling he still doesn't know what happened on the play. As you guys were processing that right after that, as you're going through the replays, what's going through your mind?
What's going through my mind is what was going on with a Rosarena, because he was not in the shot and then he was in the shot and he was getting back up. And we didn't know that he had stumbled. Where was the ball, which is always a great thing for a play-by-play guy to know, is, hey, where's the baseball right now? So, what was going on? And I think one of the hidden, really important things of the moment was when a Rosarena thought Smith had the ball, and he took one step back towards third. He did it, but he never stopped looking at Smith. And had he just turned and run for third, he wouldn't have scored, right? They would have gotten him a third, or he would have been in a rundown or whatever. But he kept his eyes on Smith, and that allowed him to see that the ball had gotten away, and then he came in and scored. So it was little things like that. It was little things like, oh, Smith is offline because he thought he didn't know Muncy was going to cut the throw. He went to get the throw from Taylor, and then he had to shuffle back to the plate. Like, it's almost like it was a play, like a murder mystery, and every actor had a different role. You know what I mean? Every actor had a part. But it wasn't until the very end, when they revealed the ending on stage and they take their bows, that we understood what everybody's role in it was. It is, without question, the craziest end of a game that I've ever been associated with. Not just World Series game, like any game, and the fact that it happened in the World Series, you know, magnifies the moment by 1,000.
Yeah, I was trying to put it into context quickly because I was doing the post-game show, and I'm like, okay, well, it's not the greatest game I've ever seen. And then I run through those, but what category does it lead? And I wound up with the craziest, nuttiest game that I'd seen with all the lead changes in the last innings. How do you feel about that? We had this conversation during Game 5.
Yeah, it's right there. I mean, again, craziest World Series ending, automatic. In my mind, for a game that I've been at, like I wasn't there in 1986. But this to me is even crazier. It's like a college basketball game. When your team is tied and you hit a game winning shot, that's one thing. But when your team is down and you hit a game winning shot, that's another thing. And this game went from losing to winning in one play, down a run to winning by a run. There was, you know, they were tied for the briefest of moments, really, in that play. What I loved about this game was it's not just the crazy ending, though. It was the fifth inning and the sixth inning and the seventh inning. Like, each team scored every half inning between the bottom of the fourth and the top of the eighth. Eight consecutive half innings, they scored. Never more than three, like never enough to blow the game open. But the lead change was back and forth. I mean, you're part of the broadcast, so you know. How many times did I say this is like a tug of war where one team pulls really hard, the Dodgers pull really hard, and now they have a two-run lead, and then the Rays say not so fast, and they pull back, and it's a one-run game again. And so I think this game is right there with Game 6 of the 2011 World Series craziness, Game 4 of the 93 World Series 15-14 game, the game between Houston and the Dodgers in 2017. Like it's if you're counting, you know, you're not getting to more than four or five games before this game comes in there. And with the ending, it's got to be right up at the top of the list.
So the Rays win Game 4, but Kenley Jansen stops by Dave Roberts' office before Game 5 and says, right after Game 4 and says, we have to keep our heads up. And they do that. They win Game 5 to take a 3-2 lead in this series. And part of me is really happy for Clayton Kershaw that he again got a win in a World Series game. What did you see in him last night?
I thought he was really good. I didn't think his stuff was as electric as it was in Game 1. His stuff was nasty in Game 1. You know, and he gave up more hits last night. He gave up, one more run. He didn't strike out as many, but he was still really good. I mean, 2 runs and 5 2/3, I believe it was, and 2 walks and 6 strikeouts. Like, here's how high he has set the bar and how, you know, nonstop the legacy talk about Kershaw is. His people look at him and go, yeah, he was all right last night. He was really good. I mean, you know, 5 2 in at this point of the season, 5 2/3, 5 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. That's a really good start. And I'm really happy for him. I thought he's gotten a bit of a tough deal on the whole October thing. You know, he hasn't pitched as well as he has in the regular season. We all know that. But, you know, he pitched against Houston twice in 17, great in the first. Who knows what they had on him in the second. I thought the Cardinals way back when had his signs a couple of times. There have been times where he was left out longer maybe than he should have because they didn't have a bridge to Jansen. Again, I'm not giving him a complete pass, but I went into the World Series saying, it doesn't matter to me who wins the World Series. I'm totally neutral in that. But I really wanted Kershaw to pitch well because he deserves to have this narrative go away. He's one of the 10 greatest pitchers of all time. He's been a great ambassador for the sport. You know, he's a great guy, great charitable, humanitarian, all that. He's been a wonderful part of baseball from the moment he showed up, however many years ago that it was. And I'm really happy that he pitched well. And I'm also happy he pitched well last night, Buster, because the storyline I wanted last night is who's Gabe going to use out of the bullpen? you know, we knew who Kevin Cash would use out of the bullpen if they were up a run late or two runs late. But I wanted to see how it played out of the Dodger bullpen. And it was very interesting, actually, with May and Gonzalez and Trine and the decisions that Dave Roberts made. And they worked out for him last night.
Yeah, and if they hadn't worked out, he would have gotten absolutely destroyed. For when he took Kershaw out of the game, I was glad that it happened the way that it did. And I thought he handled it perfectly last night. You know, there was a shot in the dugout going into before the bottom of the sixth inning, as the Dodgers are batting in the top of the sixth inning, and Kershaw goes over to Roberts. And look, I'm not an expert lip reader, but I'm pretty sure what they talked about was that Kershaw would get two hitters. He would pitch through Brandon Lowe, and he gets those outs quickly in the bottom of the sixth inning. And then Dave goes out, and Kershaw, maybe, you know, having gotten two outs quickly, is thinking, I could finish this right here. You got Justin Turner lobbying on his behalf, looking at Dave Roberts, and Dave's like, nope, we're good. And you know what? Now that Kershaw's 32 years old, you know, 85 pitches, which is about where he's been during the course of this season, I thought it was the right call. What about you?
Yeah, it was interesting. So I saw a quote from Dave Roberts after the game, Buster, where he said the plan was 21 batters. Meaning, like, they knew even beforehand they were going to get him through Lau third time through the order. So it appears that was the situation. And I agree with you. I think he's talking to Roberts in the dugout about, hey, it's gone pretty well. I got a lot in the tank. And well, no. You get two batters here because the plan was to get you through Lau. And you know, you said he got him quickly. He got him on two pitches, right? He got two outs on two pitches in the sixth inning. And he lobbied respectfully, but, you know, he was determined when Roberts was not moving off the plan, which is, we all know, was discussed before the game in the front office in the analytics department and you know, a lot of cooks in the kitchen on that one. I thought because it was 4-2 at the time, that they had a two-run lead, that they might let him have one more batter. And if that guy got on, then if that guy got on, then they would take him out. They would still have the lead. The worst thing that could have happened is Margot hits a home run and it's 4-3. But I think in hindsight, it was A, sticking to the plan. And, you know, given that there were two outs, nobody on, that's a pretty good spot to bring Dustin May into the game. You know, if you bring him in and Margot's got a base hit and the tying runs at the plate, that raises the, you know, the stress level for a young pitcher like Dustin May. So it worked out perfectly in hindsight. I was kind of hoping he would get one more batter. But again, the plan is the plan. The matchup is the matchup. And Dustin May was really good last night. I mean, you know, he's got a very bright future, and he got some five big outs in last night's game.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that in a second, but one more thing about the Kershaw and Roberts that I love from last night. It gave you some insight into Clayton Kershaw as a teammate, which all I've ever heard of is what a great teammate he is. I felt like, and this is in the midst of the game, because Clayton's smart. He knows how the media works. He's standing out on the mound. He talks to Dave Roberts, as you said. He made his case respectfully. Dave Roberts stuck with the plan. Kershaw walks off, and in the dugout, he goes over and he and Dave Roberts sharing a big hug. And then after the game, when he's asked about it, you know, he said, "Nope, I'm good. You know, Dave made the right decision." I thought that hug was really, you know, that's Kershaw understanding the cameras are on him and that he doesn't want to have a situation where he's, you know, he's going to be cast as having second guessed his manager.
Yeah, 100%, because he is a good guy and he is a good teammate. And again, he knows, I don't believe Dave Roberts made that decision in a vacuum on his own. I think there were other people involved in the front office, like we've talked about. You know, it's look across the field at the Rays, right? Look at what they've done. Remember Blake Snell walking off the mound earlier in the playoffs, how unhappy he was. So like, this is the way baseball is going. And the plan was 21 batters, get him through Brandon Lowe the third time and then get May in there against the right hand hitting. And Ray Margot. So, you know, baseball is different than it used to be. There's the very odd time where a pitcher can talk his manager into leaving him. You know, Zach Greinke, Dusty Baker happened last round for Houston, but those are, you know, 1 in 1,000 right now. That doesn't happen anymore, right? The plan is the plan. And most of all, I'm happy he pitched well. And that could be it for him. I mean, the only chance that we see him again is if it goes 7. And if something goes really strange, I think, for the Dodgers, and he's the guy getting up in the bullpen. But I don't think it's going to happen. You know, in past years, if they needed a guy, you know, he'd be the bridge sometimes. But now between May and Urias and Trinan and Gratterall and maybe Jansen, who knows what his role will be. But those are five guys right there. I don't think Kershaw I might be wrong, but I don't think Kershaw pitches ahead of any of those guys in a key situation. So even if it gets to seven, and if Buehler gives them a good outing, I think Clayton Kershaw is done for the 2020 season. And if they win the World Series, he's got a shot at MVP. Two good starts, one of them really good, two wins, and he's got a shot at World Series MVP.
I totally agree with you on that. I think we've reached a stage in his career where his manager's not going to ask extra out of him. Dustin May, the previous three outings before he came into the game last night, 4 1/3 innings, 8 hits, 4 walks, 6 runs. But you know what? I think Dave Roberts, because of how the bullpen was just decimated in game 4, he had to find heroes, and he got one in Dustin May.
Yeah, he really did. And I'd love to, and I guess tomorrow when we have our Zoom call with Dave Roberts before game 6, we could say, why were these choices the guys that you chose? I mean, Dustin May's got a fantastic arm, 101 mile an hour sinker. And I know sinker isn't in vogue these days. It's about getting swing and a miss. And he doesn't get a ton of swing and miss in spite of the fact that he throws it 101. It's crazy to me because it moves so much. And then he's got a cutter and a breaking ball. He's got so many different weapons. I think he's going to be special. In what role, and does he have to modify his arsenal a little bit? Who knows? We'll wait and see. But he came out and gave him 5 big outs. He's a very emotional guy. We talked about on the air last night, somebody hit a medium depth fly ball off him. And as soon as the ball was up in the air, he jumped high in the air off the mound, like an oh no jump. And then when he came down and looked out to left field and he saw that it wasn't going to be that deep, he was fine. But he's very emotional out there, and I don't know, I don't know him. I've never met him, and we're not on site this year. I don't know if his confidence is as good as it can be, but every time there's contact in the air, he looks nervous to me, like he thinks the ball is going out of the ballpark. But for him to come back and pitch the way that he did last night after having a couple of rough outings in the postseason, I think is going to be great for his career. And it's really necessary for the Dodgers. Yes, the Dodgers have a great pitching staff, but when you look at the way they have used guys in the postseason, for them to win the World Series, May's got to contribute. Gonsolin's got to contribute. They just need those guys because virtually everybody else they have on the staff is a one-inning guy. And they need these two younger pitchers to be really good. And May was last night, and we'll see what Gonsolin has in game 6 tomorrow. It's going to be a bullpen game for the Dodgers. And, they're up 3-2. And they've got Buehler in game 7, so they've got two really good things going for them. But it is a bullpen game for them in game 6, and they'll have to piece it together.
You led me perfectly to my last question, and that is about World Series adrenaline. The one thing I wondered after seeing May last night was he might be an example of what I've heard for years from managers, from coaches, with catchers, and they talk about how some players, especially earlier in their careers, might be better suited to coming out of the bullpen than starting because they don't have all the buildup and the time to think about it. And May's struggles really happened when he started for them earlier in the postseason. And on the flip side of him throwing well last night was Tyler Glasnow, who I think you would agree with me has some of the best stuff in baseball. But I was struck before game 1 of the World Series how Kevin Cash freely acknowledged, going into starts, the big question about Tyler Glasnow is how long will it take him to control his adrenaline? That seemed to have really hurt him in this series.
Yeah, I think so. And he's another guy like May who's just got a fantastic arm, but he just hasn't been able to command the strike zone. He walked 6 in game 1 of the World Series, and he was better last night, but his command still wasn't great. Gave up a couple of home runs. It makes you think how good major league hitters are when you can square up guys like Tyler Glasnow and Dustin May, because it's filthy stuff that both guys are throwing. Glasnow, I think in a bit of a different way for May, I agree with you, is an adrenaline guy, is an emotion guy. He's a terrific guy. He's a great interview. He's a great teammate. But he hasn't looked comfortable in either of his two starts on the mound for the Rays. And it's happened early in both games, right? It's happened right out of the chute in the first inning. And I got to imagine if, you're pitching the biggest game of your life, and it goes a little bit sideways on you right in the first inning, it's human nature for most people to say, uh-oh, now what am I going to do? Or, uh-oh, here we go again. There aren't many among us who can say, I got this. Slow your heart rate. I got this. That's a really, really hard thing to do. A Kershaw can do it. A Greinke can do it. A Wainwright can do it. Glasnow and May aren't at the same stage of their careers as those other guys are. So I didn't think that Glasnow looked all that comfortable. I do know this. He'll be in the bullpen for 6 and 7. You know that. He's already gone to Kevin Cash and said, I can give you whatever you need. And, you know, he was on the bike and Snell was throwing in game four, right? We'll see Snell starting game six. We know they've got Charlie Morton. We know who the top relievers are for the Rays. But Tyler Glasnow is going to have his cleats on down to the bullpen for six and seven if they get that far.
He probably already has him on, you know, the day before the game.
Yeah.
Knowing it, knowing his personality, he's such a good dude. All right, Dan, thanks for doing this. Always fun talking to you.
You too. See you on the iPad tomorrow night.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
So at the end of game four, Rays outfielder Brett Phillips, who was 0-for-2 in this entire postseason, got the game-winning hit. He was flying around the field after getting that big hit, and he talked about how he wanted to give credit to the rest of the team.
What a great team win all around. Holy cow. Just proving why Kevin Cash is one of the best managers in the league, using almost his whole lineup, almost every 28 guys. To come together, just string along some at-bats. Pitchers did awesome and didn't fight. And I feel very blessed to be sitting right here. Harold Reynolds and those guys were saying I hadn't had a hit since September 25th, which it didn't matter. You know, I just felt confident being in the box.
Brett Phillips talked about the celebration.
Oh, man. I saw KK do the airplane run in one of the videos, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So after we won, I took off, you know, like an airplane, because I thought it was cool. Well, little did I know, I exhausted all my energy doing the airplane. And then all the guys caught up to me and were yelling. And next thing I know, I had no energy or breath to yell. And if you see in the video, I kind of like have to get out of the doggy pile because I was literally this close to passing out. And it was just through pure excitement and pure joy. I know there's some guys out there with a really slow heart rate that have been in this situation probably many times before, and like, you know, it's just another day for them. But for myself, it's not. And I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it and show all the excitement that I'm feeling on the inside. That's what I'm portraying on the outside.
In fact, Brett Phillips told reporters that he needed an IV bag afterward after hyperventilating, and that his resting heart rate was 140. Think about that.
Numbers game.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you know, there's no question in this era of analytics, nobody would try to steal home or order it from a bench. Can you just put some numbers on an attempted steal of home?
Yeah. So, I mean, I thought it was a pretty interesting play. I mean, you know, obviously so unexpected. And, you know, we know what Kevin Cash said after the game. But it's fun to see something we don't see a whole lot. And to your point, we really, really don't see this very much. We hadn't seen, obviously, a steal of home, even an attempt in the World Series since 2002 with Brad Fulmer. We hadn't really seen a straight steal attempt since 1982 with Lonnie Smith. And, you know, league-wide stolen base percentage was actually like the highest it's been as far as it's been tracked in 2020. But part of that is because so few guys try to steal these days. There were only 12 attempted steals of home in the regular season, which if we prorate that over a full season, it would be tied for the third fewest in any season, with like 2015 and 2013 and right up there with these years that we've seen lately. But Tom Tango, who works for MLB.com, put together this really interesting sort of comparison with like cost benefit analysis based on the percentage of the play. So when Margot was standing in third, the Rays win expectancy, basically odds that they had to win, was 42.1%. If he had been successful on that, it would have gone up to 54.2%. But instead it dropped to 35.6% when he was out at home. So in total, the cost of the play was 0.65 wins compared to a benefit of 0.121 wins. I know that's kind of weird to think of wins in that decimal, but bear with me. So basically, based on cost benefit, so if you add those numbers together and you consider what was worth it versus what wasn't, the risk would have been worth it if Margot thought he had about a 35% chance of being safe. So obviously, we're not inside his head. We don't know how likely he thought it was, but he's a fast guy and he's a pretty good base runner. So he must have thought he had a pretty good chance. But obviously, that's pretty complex and we don't see this a whole lot. And that's why, because you need to be pretty sure that you're pretty close to being at least 50-50 for being safe.
And he was almost safe. I like the play. You know, I'm going to ask Tim Kirchner about that coming up. Let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
So number three is 3-2. So that's the lead that the Dodgers now have in this series. It's the eighth time in franchise history they've taken a 3-2 lead in a best-of-seven postseason series. They're 6-1 in the prior seven series, with the only loss coming in the 1952 World Series. But then will we get a game seven is the other question here. So of the six series wins for the Dodgers, looking at it from their perspective, in those 3-2 leads, two came in game six, 1981 World Series and 1959 World Series. And the other four did come in game seven, the 2018 NLCS, the 1988 NLCS, 65 World Series and 55 World Series. So it feels like we're going to get a game seven. I know we don't know. Today's the off day. We'll see what tomorrow feels like. But Dodgers in a pretty good position historically.
Number two.
Number two is 60.2%. So that's the current percentage of runs that the Dodgers have scored this postseason with two outs. And feels like we've been tracking this all postseason, but especially lately. So 60.2% would be the highest percentage of runs scored with two outs in a single postseason for any team that played at least 10 games by a decent amount. You know, they at one point were 60.6 and even higher in the midst of games. The 1992 Braves have that record right now, 59.3%. 2008 Red Sox are second on the list, 58.7%. So it feels like if the Dodgers continue to play their game, what we've seen from them, they're going to lead this or at least come close. And it's so funny that it feels like they get to two outs and it doesn't feel like the inning is over. And obviously, at a certain point, it's probably a little bit random, but it's, you know, it's four out this far. 59 of their 98 runs have been with two outs.
Number one.
So number one is 66.7. So we went with how the Dodgers are scoring a lot of runs. So I want to go with how the Rays are scoring a lot of runs. So 66.7% of the Rays runs this postseason have been scored via the home run, which would be the highest rate in a single postseason, again, with that minimum of 10 games. And while scoring with two outs seems to be working for the Dodgers, I would say that scoring via home runs does not really seem to be working overall for the Rays. Obviously, they've made it this far. We saw them not hit any home runs last night. They still scored two runs. They did not win the game. And I think that for them to really be successful here, and given the Dodgers pitching and everything else, that percentage needs to go down a little bit over these potential next two games if they're going to win this World Series.
Sarah, before you go, I was curious about where you would put that game four on your list of World Series games. How would you characterize what you saw in game four and compare that to other games?
Oh my gosh, it's so hard to rank it. I mean, I think that, you know, you almost need to bring out different types of descriptors, right? I mean, it was insane, but it was really insane in that final play. There were some games that felt like they were insane all throughout the game, or so many different things happened, but I would certainly put it towards the top of the list in terms of craziest, most unexpected. I mean, that play happened and I was just sitting in front of my computer for a solid 2 minutes of like, wow. Like, I couldn't even think, okay, what's the context here? What should I be doing right now? Because I was just like, did that just happen? What just happened? And I needed to see it again, like, three times before I could really, like, get my brain going again. And that doesn't happen a whole lot. You know, I mean, 2016, Game 7 was obviously with the rain delay and everything else and the historic nature. That was really something. We had the game in 2017 where there were the most run home runs hit in extras in game 2 in 2017. We obviously had 2018 when we were there for longer than a cross country flight. But I would say that this had a really, really strong marking on people, even just from that one play.
Thanks, Sarah. It was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was.
Seamheads rejoice.
Nerd alert.
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkchian on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkchian covers baseball for ESPN. He's been doing Baseball Tonight and SportsCenters during the World Series. And Tim, I want to start with this. You know, I was thinking about this after watching Walker Buehler absolutely dominating Game 3, that he has a chance to sort of be the Derek Jeter of pitchers. You know, he's 26 years old. He's already built this incredible postseason resume. And with the Dodgers being as good as they are, you can imagine him doing this for years to come.
Buster, he has a 182 ERA, 128 ERA, sorry, in his last 9 postseason starts. Only 3 pitchers have ever had an ERA that low over a 9-start stretch in the history of the postseason. He just became the first pitcher ever to strike out 10 in a World Series game of 6 innings or less. And his strikeout rate in this postseason is 14.04 per 9 innings, which is the highest in any postseason of any pitcher with 20 or more innings. And you're right. The Dodgers are going to be here for years and years to come. And if he stays with the Dodgers, we're going to be talking about him as one of the great postseason pitchers of all time, which he's already gaining on, but he's going to get so many starts. Jeter got 200 hits in his postseason career. This is what Walker Buehler is going to get long-term, and I have no doubt that he's going to be really, really good for a long time, and he'll be able to do it in October.
Yeah, Derek played in the World Series in 5 of his first 6 full seasons in the big leagues. You're right. He had 200 career hits, 158 games in the postseason. Do you know who's second all-time for hits in the postseason, Tim, and what that number is?
I don't.
It's Bernie Williams with 128. So, you know, that potentially could be Walker Buehler. You think about it. You know, last night, Clayton Kershaw sets the record for most strikeouts in the postseason. What was it, 205, 206? And Walker Buehler probably sometime, if he has another start in this series, is going to go over 90 strikeouts already. And he, again, he's 26 years old. Where would you place Game 4 in your pantheon of World Series games? And how would you define it?
Well, it was clearly the craziest finish that I've ever seen to a World Series game. I was at the Buckner game, Buster, and that was remarkable. But the Buckner game, even though the stakes were higher at that time, there were not 2 errors made on that final play, and no one fell down running the bases in the Buckner game. So there's no doubt in my mind that I have never seen a World Series game end quite like that. It was a great game, period. But it was the craziest finish I've ever seen to a World Series game. And I'll never forget how that unfolded. And I'll never forget how crazy that was. We've never seen anything quite like that, especially when you consider that there were no lead changes in the first 32 innings of this World Series. And then it became the first World Series game ever with 3 lead changes from the 6th inning on. And that final lead change with Brett Phillips, who hadn't had an RBI since July the 27th, ends up getting the big hit that leads to all the chaos. I've never seen anything like that. I don't want to overstate this, Buster, but when I left the studio that night, my hands were trembling as I was trying to explain exactly what we had just seen, because I know I'd never seen anything like that.
No, there were two charged errors on that last play, but it was very interesting listening to managers right after the game. I mean, they're on the field, and this is all happening in front of them, and it was pretty clear from listening to Kevin Cash and Dave Roberts, they weren't sure what happened. Like when Dave Roberts was describing the play, he talked about Mookie Betts throwing the ball home. No, Mookie wasn't involved in the play. It was Chris Taylor who, of course, fumbled the ball and then threw homeward. Or Rosarena falling down between third base and home. And Kenley Jansen, just watching where he went, Tim, he didn't go to back up home plate. He was standing in front of home plate when the ball got there. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, the whole play was so weird. So we interviewed Brett Phillips yesterday on Baseball Tonight, and I asked him, you know, what did you see? What was your reaction when you watched the guy in front of you fall down rounding third? And he said, you know, I didn't even really see it. Like, he was so blind to what was going on because it was such an insane play that he didn't even really recognize that the guy in front of him had fallen down. He was like going to third anyway, even though a guy fell down. That's how crazy that play was. I told Mark Teixeira, if Randy Rosarena hits a walk-off homer here to win that game, I won't be able to do the show because it will be too big. It will be like too impossible to do a show after that. And then something happened, that play, that was even more remarkable. I mean, we've seen walk-off homers, but we've never seen a play ending like that.
It was remarkable. You're right. And I was doing the postgame show on SportsCenter, and I felt like I was struggling to sort of put my head around it and like try to encapsulate everything that happened and sort through my thoughts about the various things that we had just seen. And it took me about 3 minutes that it was almost like I was just trying to slow my heart rate down. Okay, just remember, big picture, where are we today? It was very funny. All right, so last night in Game 5, attempted steal of home from Manny Margot. In listening to Kevin Cash after the game, he was incredibly polite. He never ripped Margot, but it was pretty clear it was not his choice. What did you think about it? And you're watching the game with Mark Teixeira, Carl Ravitch. What was the reaction with you guys when he tried that?
Well, I know I shrieked. I shrieked, as I often do, because I went, oh, my God, he's going home. And I thought, given the trouble that the Rays were having with runners in scoring position, he's got a left-hander against a left-hander. They're two outs. They're in trouble, and they need to score a run here. I thought it was worth a try. We went and checked. Mike Bonzani, our great researcher, looked this up when I begged him to find the last time we had a straight steal of home like that in a World Series game, meaning no double steal, no guy on first takes off, and no potential squeeze bunt where guy misses a squeeze bunt and you're out stealing. That was a pure straight steal of home, and Bonds found that Lonnie Smith in the 1982 World Series was the last time that that happened. I was stunned that someone would do that, but I thought it was a good try, and I thought it was a great play, and it didn't work out because Max Muncy screamed at Clayton Kershaw, step off. That's what a first baseman yells to a left-handed pitcher who can't see that guy going. Step off, and Kershaw did a spectacular job of stepping off the rubber and making a pretty good throw to the plate under circumstances. If anything goes wrong there, Manny Margot is safe at the plate.
Yeah, Tim, I'm glad to hear you say that because I got to say, and again, you know, we're in an age of analytics and teams are not going to attempt stolen bases like that, at least from the bench. But I feel like this is a play that is absolutely going to be viewed through the prism of the result. If he had been safe, we would have been talking after the game this morning about what a gutsy play he was. But because he was out, there's a lot of criticism. I was on the morning show today, and Keyshawn Johnson was talking about that. And I just disagreed. I'm like, look, it's a left-handed pitcher. He's got that unusual setup where he raises his hands over his head. You got a base runner getting a good lead off third base. The Dodgers playing a shift. He had a clear shot. I thought it was worthwhile. And remember, the play was close enough that for a moment we wondered if the Rays would actually challenge the call and that Margot may have actually been safe. And he just got nailed by a hair.
Right. Mark Teixeira was all in favor of taking a chance in that situation. And again, analytics say you can't do that. Of course, analytics say that. But when you're up against the Dodgers, who are hitting home runs at a record rate, and they basically have a better roster than you, you have to take a chance. You have to push the envelope once in a while. You can't just stand there toe-to-toe and try to outslug the Dodgers. So Manny Margot took a chance, and it was a calculated risk, and it didn't work out. But just because it didn't work out doesn't mean it was a terrible play, because it wasn't.
Max Muncy hits a home run last night, and of course we love bat flips these days and bat throws. And as soon as he did it last night, Tim, a name popped into my head, Reggie Jackson, Mr. October. That was the type of bat flip that Reggie used to do.
Yeah, and look, I'm okay with bat flips in the World Series as long as it's not ridiculous. And I didn't find Muncy's to be ridiculous in any way. And speaking of that, by the way, Buster, now the Dodgers have 9 different guys who've hit a home run in the World Series. Nobody's ever done that in one World Series. They've got a home run from 8 different spots in the batting order. No team has ever done that in the history of the World Series. And they've got now 8 straight games in the postseason with a multi-homer game. No one's ever done that in the history of the postseason. So this Dodger power is something that we can't not recognize, because it shows up every day. They hit a couple homers, and if you're not ready for it, they're going to beat you.
That shows up every day, and the quality of the at-bats for the Dodgers in this World Series has been unbelievable. The other day on a Zoom call, I think it was before Game 3, I asked Kevin Cash about that. Hey, compare this Dodger lineup to other lineups that you've seen in your time in baseball. And he goes, you know what? That's a great question. He goes, they'd have to be at the top in terms of 1 through 9, the quality of the at-bats they're throwing out, which is why, Tim, I thought that, Blake Snell pitching in Game 2, he did fine. They talked to him before the game about how, look, the Dodgers are not going to expand the zone. You need to attack the strike zone. And he mostly did that. But I still feel like with as many pitches as he throws and as imprecise as he is, this is not a good matchup for the Rays in Game 6, even though the Dodgers have a bullpen game.
Right. There are no good matchups for the Dodgers now. They have scored 59 runs in this postseason with 2 outs. No one else is even close to that in the history of any postseason. They have scored 41 runs on 2 out hits. No one in the history of the postseason is close to that. And as Mark Teixeira loves to say, 2 out hits get you to heaven. And that's what the Dodgers have done better than anyone in this postseason, or really any postseason, is when they hit the ball out of the ballpark. But then when it comes time to get a big 2-out hit and drive in a run, they've done that better than anyone, led by Max Muncy, who has been remarkable in those situations. 12 RBIs in this postseason with 2 outs.
All right, Tim, before we go, last week we learned that you run to the theme of Rocky as you do laps around the hotel. What's the music today when you're going to go running?
All right, let's be clear again. Justin Ware, our producer, stuck some sort of computer out with the Rocky theme. I was not running to the Rocky theme. He was poking fun at me, okay? Let's also make sure that we know that in a real fight, yo, Adrian could beat me up in a real fight, okay? So I will run today just to get some exercise, but I am not doing it to the Rocky theme or anything else, because nobody is worse in a fight than me.
Thanks, Tim.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Bleacher Tweets for Monday. First up, we got Kyle Benning at Kyle_Benning. He writes in, how does the end of Game 4 rank in all-time World Series game finishes? Wow, what an incredibly entertaining game. the whole way through, and what a crazy turn of events to walk it off. Where does it stand, Buster? The people want to know.
Well, and we've been talking about it during the podcast. Taylor, what about for you? Where does it stand for you in terms of World Series games?
I don't think it's at the top for me. I mean, just recency bias, but watching that, the game seven of Cubs Indians and the rain delay and all that, that was pretty wild. But this ending was bananas. I was going nuts in my house. My wife woke up. She was like, what is going on? Is someone breaking into our home? So I thoroughly enjoyed it. Next up, we got Eric at EB Miller 76. He writes in, flew into Dallas and hit games 2 and 3, decided to take last night off and hit games 5 and 6 instead. In terms of greatest World Series games of all time, how bad did I screw up missing game 4? Yikes, Eric, that's tough.
Yeah, Eric, when I read your tweet, I thought of Robin Williams' character in Good Will Hunting. You remember that, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's play the clip here.
It went to 12. Bottom of the 12th, in stepped Carlton Fisk.
Old Pudge. Steps up to the plate. You know, he's got that weird stance.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, boom! He clocks it, you know. High fly ball on the left field line. 35,000 people on their feet, yelling at the ball. But that's not because Fisk, he's waving at the ball like a madman.
Yeah,
he's going, get over! Get over! Get over! And then it hits a foul pole. Oh, he goes in. And 35,000 fans, you know, they charge the field, you know?
Yeah, and he's...
Oh, no, he's like, go and get on the... Get out of the way!
Bangs in. I can't believe you had tickets in that game!
Yeah.
Did you rush the field?
No, I didn't rush the field. I wasn't there.
What?
No, I was in a bar having a drink with my future wife.
You missed Pudge Fisk's home run?
Oh, yeah.
To have a drink with some lady you never met?
Yeah, but you should have seen her. She was a stunner.
Yep. And it's funny about that one. When I saw that, I've never told you this, Taylor, but going into the 1975 playoffs, my Uncle Bob, who worked in a sporting goods store in Manchester, New Hampshire, told me that I could pick any game I wanted to in the postseason for the Red Sox. And my feeling was, look, Oakland had won the World Series 3 straight years. I was, you know, the old, you grow up on a dairy farm, it's bird in a hand is worth two in the bush. I'm like, game one of the playoffs. But I thought about that if I had been at Game 6 of the World Series. That would have been pretty cool.
Oh, man. Similar moment to Eric there. Interesting stuff.
Yep.
Last one for today. We got John Buell at JBuell19 writes in, Manfred's in favor of keeping the runner at second rules and extra. You think teams will put emphasis on small ball traits like bunting and hitting behind runners? Seems like the perfect tools for a fifth outfielder or utility guy to make the roster.
Yeah, I think you're right, John. And also, I think we're going to see teams carry a speed guy, a guy who's really good at stealing bases, maybe not necessarily a great hitter.
All righty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Rest up, everyone. It was a long weekend. Enjoy the day off.
That's it for today. My thanks to Dan, Tim, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.